Live from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank, the bank that specializes in understanding you. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And hello again, everyone. Welcome to another edition of North Fulton Business Radio. I'm John Ray, and we are not quite back in our studio inside Renaissance Bank, but it's coming, folks. It really is. We're going to be back on April the 12th. Here we do this show here. Right now, we're taping this show at the end of March. So in a couple of weeks, we'll be back in our studio, and we're looking forward to that day. In the meantime, Renaissance Bank has gone on uninterrupted helping small businesses through a pandemic environment, and they've done great work in the first round of PPP. They've been very supportive all along the way, and I know that personally from my own experience and the clients that I work with. So if you're tired of the big bank experience, and you know what I mean by that, 1-800 numbers, they don't want to talk to like real people or any, have you talked to real people, things like that. If you want more personal service for your business, but you want a bank that's big enough to handle pretty much anything you can throw at them, check out Renaissance Bank. Go to renaissancebank.com, find their local office, and get in touch. And you'll be able to sit across the desk from a real live banker and talk about your business and see if they can help. Renaissance Bank, understanding you, member FDIC. And now I want to welcome Bruce Siegel. Bruce is senior counsel at the law firm of Taylor English here in Atlanta. Bruce, welcome.
Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce. So let's talk a little bit about you and what you're doing serving folks out there. Tell us about your practice.
Great. Well, yes, I, as you said, I'm senior counsel at Taylor English. I am building and developing a practice in the entertainment and sports section of the firm. I focus on sports and entertainment brand protection and licensing. I help both sports organizations, entertainment entities, individuals protect their well-known names, images, logos, and the like from a protective position, and also to help license and enter into agreements with those who want to tie in through licensing or endorsement relationships with the sports and entertainment properties.
You've got a long background, long history in this field. Why don't you get into that and talk about your background there?
Well, sure. After attending law school in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, I had the opportunity to move to Atlanta to work for a college licensing startup, essentially, and was a founding member of the Collegiate Licensing Company. And the Collegiate Licensing Company actually began in Selma, but Bill Battle, former head coach at the University of Tennessee, played football for Coach Bear Bryant, moved the business, which he founded in 1981, from Selma, Alabama to Atlanta. I joined the company very shortly thereafter, packed up my stuff after law school and drove to Atlanta and stayed in my aunt and uncle's basement in Sandy Springs and went to work, being a trademark attorney for a company that was premised on helping colleges and universities recognize that these names and logos and images and mascots were valuable intellectual property. At the time, not many schools were actually protecting their marks. I mean, people produced merchandise and sold it in the bookstore, that had Buzz and that had the University of Georgia Bulldog logos on them. They weren't entered into agreements where they paid royalties to the school and produced product under the supervision of the institution per se. And so the idea was schools shouldn't necessarily leave money on the table. And as television exposure, the popularity of college sports really, were causing a lot of people to get excited about that. And that translated into producing a lot of unlicensed merchandise that would be sold all around campus, flea markets, swap meets, you know, pretty much anywhere. And so our job was to get our hands around all of that and convince schools that they should enter into, you know, programs to protect their trademarks, perhaps contract with us to do it because, you know, we have the infrastructure and enable us to, by protecting these marks, license them and maybe, you know, protect how their marks were going to be used on products and in promotions and maybe generate some royalty revenues in the process. And so the company grew rapidly. It was based on the NFL's model of centralized management. You know, we thought that if we could sign up a number of colleges and universities under one umbrella, and then as agent on behalf of those schools, enter into license agreements, this would make it an efficient process. So, a manufacturer that wanted to get into college, instead of having to work with 100 different universities and sign 100 different contracts, could work through CLC, through the Collegiate Licensing Company, get the rights. The universities could control their rights through using CLC's administrative processes, as well as our enforcement and protection services, which is where I came in. I was out stopping people from selling the bootleg product. And, you know, the business grew rapidly throughout the 80s and 90s and came to represent over 200 colleges and universities, bowl games, the NCAA, and even moved on to starting licensing programs for NASCAR, PGA Tour, Churchill Downs, and even got involved when Atlanta won the Olympic Games and had a limited ability to license the use of the Atlanta Olympic mark. So it's been an interesting ride.
Yeah. Now, and there, you know, I'm betting the over on how many nasty letters your signature is on over the years, right? For people that have infringed on trademarks that you were tasked to protect, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was the guy. I tried to not be a trademark bully per se.
Sure,
you know, you want to make sure that you use proportion when you're trying to, you know, convince someone that they need to enter into an agreement or stop using the marks, particularly in the early days when everyone was an infringer, right? I mean, before college universities formalized and started their licensing programs, you know, the argument was not that you should know better, but that the rules have changed.
Yep.
And I'm here to explain that to you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, but I think that, you know, it took a while and it took, you know, some sweat equity, you know, getting into and kind of throwing yourself into it, but it worked.
Yeah, for sure. I'm interested in how well it did work, really. I mean, you're talking about an industry that essentially did not exist. What does that look like today in terms of the revenues that go back to these institutions? The royalty revenues, what, you know, can you give us an idea of that?
Oh, gosh. You know, there are schools that, you know, that, again, when you look at, you know, you've got the trademark licensing side and then you've got endorsements and sponsorships. And, you know, it has clearly become a very, very significant revenue stream for colleges and universities that basically started from, you know, from zero and has now evolved into, you know, many millions of dollars a year for the larger institutions, for the Georgias, for the Alabamas, for the Michigans of the world. And so it really has afforded universities the ability to, you know, to regain and capture control of their intellectual property, because under trademark law, you've really got to have a protection and enforcement mechanism in place. And in doing so, it has enabled the business to grow dramatically. You know, when I started, it was very much a family dominated company. I was one of the first non-family members to come in to the business in the early 80s. In 2007, the company was acquired by sports conglomerate IMG. And 10 years later by Endeavor, William Morris Endeavor, WME. and, you know, is now part of, you know, probably the largest, you know, entertainment and sports entity in the world. And so it's, you know, it certainly has been a business that started out, you know, with a great idea, a great concept. Schools should protect their intellectual property, and has flourished into a real force in the world of sports marketing and licensing in general.
Sure. So Bruce, let's talk about the, I guess you might say, the subject at hand, if you will, which is name, image, and likeness. For those that maybe have been hiding somewhere and haven't kept up with this, talk about what name, image, and likeness is all about, and why that has come to the forefront as the issue it is right now.
Sure. Well, you know, as I noted, you know, during the emergence of colleges and universities and protecting their trademarks and licensing their trademarks, it was really all about collegiate institutions building brands. And we were working and focused on the names and logos and the like. From time to time, people would say, well, why can't I also use a picture or a name or a reference to a student athlete? And throughout NCAA's history, the answer has been no commercialization of names, images, and likenesses of student athletes. That is completely against our underlying principle of amateurism. And under amateurism, you know, these are students, you know, that they're student athletes. And, you know, that is what distinguishes collegiate sports from professional sports. And the NCAA, you know, is perfectly, you know, warranted in, under the concept of amateurism, limiting and, you know, in not allowing this sort of exploitation to take place. And so part of my job, when people would come and say, you know, why can't I use the quarterback's image on this, you know, t-shirt that I want to do? The answer is you can't, because the NCAA says you can't. And it was, you know, the answer was no. Now we are in the process of major reform. And if 35 years ago, the major, you know, seismic shift was, you know, colleges and universities for the first time protecting their brands, you know, today, flash forward, the big issue is now there is reform where the NCAA is changing its position. They're in the process of changing their position and allowing the commercialization of student athlete name, image, and likeness, which means that, you know, come the next several months, a student athlete will be able to enter into a license agreement to appear on trading cards or t-shirts, can enter into endorsement agreements to endorse a business, and, you know, social media, you know, will be big. There are opportunities, not just for star players, you know, to have a social media presence, but all this is about is, you know, is allowing the right to commercialize the use of the identities of these student athletes. And so what NIL, name, image, and likeness, it's often referred to as NIL, is, you know, the ability, the legal ability to, you know, to exercise your right of publicity. And the right of publicity is not a federal right, it's state by state, but, you know, pretty much it's recognized that you do have the legal ability to protect and to authorize others if they want to use your image in connection with a commercial activity. Again, the only thing that stood in the way of that until recently was the NCAA. Now there is a huge confluence of events that will result in a change to that by next fall, basically.
So, yeah, let's reset here just a second. Bruce Siegel is with us, folks. He's senior counsel at Taylor English, and we're talking about all things name, image, and likeness with college student athletes. So, Bruce, it sounds like, though, that state legislatures are as much imposing reform on in the industry. I won't say upon anyone, but they're leading the way, shall we say, in terms of how this is going. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, that would definitely be accurate. You know, the NCAA was, encouraged and motivated to, to get involved in the issue and to change their rules, largely as a direct result from states beginning to pass individual bills state to state. This began in October 2019 with California, which introduced a bill saying that no institution of higher education in California can have any, can prevent a student athlete from entering into agreements to monetize his or her name, image, and likeness, whether it be licensing, endorsements, or the like. And all of a sudden, the NCAA appointed a working group to revise their rules because they felt like, well, maybe it is time. Or that with, you know, with other states following California, unless they tried to kind of scrambling ahead of this, we might end up with a patchwork of 50 different state laws that are slightly different in terms of how they govern what specifically a student athlete may or may not be able to do in connection with these new rights. And so since then, 39 states are in the process of enacting legislation, including Georgia, which has Georgia House Bill 617, which is in the legislative process. So there are six states that have already passed bills that are completed. Florida has passed a bill that will be the first to go into effect because it's scheduled to go into effect July 1 of this summer.
So why is this happening state by state versus federal? And what's the interplay between those two, levels of jurisdiction?
Well, so, since this began, being driven by California, then, quickly other states jumping in and saying, me too, it was sort of a case of the cat's out of the bag, right? This is going to happen in some way, shape, or form. And so among other things that the NCAA, lobbied and has really been a strong proponent of federal legislation. And as a result of that, there are now, since in the past year, there have been six different federal bills that have been proposed. And so you've got both multiple state bills, but you've also got multiple federal bills that are pending, which will need to be reconciled. Right. And then with the changing of, with the Democrats assuming control of Congress, the kinds of bills and how they look have shifted a little bit because you've got some federal bills that are strict. They impose significant requirements in how the process is run. Others basically say, look, a student athlete should have unfettered rights to enter into any agreement with anybody they want to. An example of the issues that are being addressed in these different federal bills include conflicts. Okay, so if schools today have entered into schools have entered into agreements with shoe manufacturers. You're a Nike school, you're an Adidas school, Under Armour to some extent, and they have basically taken over and become the supplier of all footwear and all uniforms for a university. Okay, what if your star quarterback decides that he wants to do an Adidas deal? Do you have the ability to do that, or will the legislation that ends up being the governing rule say that, well, no, you've got this rights. However, the guardrails and the limits include that you cannot enter into an agreement with a competing sponsor. Others say you can. And so you've got a divergence of a thought on this. But so that there are a whole host of issues that are, that conflict from bill to bill. However, I think that, there's nothing like a deadline. And I think that there's a recognition among some of the leaders in Congress, that include Cory Booker, Senator Blumenthal, Senator Murphy, and most recently, Senator Jerry Moran, a Republican in Kansas. All of these individuals have federal legislation pending, and there's a recognition that it is really important, to have a federal law in place before the state laws begin taking effect, which will be, again, as early as July. So there's a lot to be done, and it's not clear if, in the state of things right now, if a federal bill will be, if these bills will be reconciled and something will go into place. However, I think that there's a will among some of these legislators for this to happen, to eliminate the potential chaos of all of a sudden having state bills, pop up throughout the country.
Sounds like it's a little late for not having chaos if we've got what you described. So that's why we've got you here to kind of sort through it for us. So, I mean, let's talk about what this means. For student athletes, first of all, how do you think this sorts out for the student athlete as we set today, knowing things can change?
Well, I think that it certainly is of significance to student athletes, whatever sport they may play, whatever gender that they may be. I mean, again, there will be, star elite athletes that can command, hundreds of thousands of dollars in endorsements and enter into agreements and have big time agents representing them. However, this reform will apply to all student athletes, women's softball players, gymnastics. It's not just a football, basketball, top level, D1 program. And so, while student athletes that play in these sports may not be able to command the same kind of deals that elite athletes can, there are great opportunities to develop your own personal visibility, your own personal brand per se. And again, with opportunities, to have a presence on an Instagram, on a YouTube, all of a sudden creativity, the sky is the limit in terms of, kind of figuring out what you have to say, what you stand for. And, and all of a sudden you're unfettered in your ability to really be out there and have a voice in a way that gets your message out, but also will allow, anyone to generate revenues if they can, find a good way to do that. And so, I know that when I was in college, every little bit helped. And so I think that, it's terrific to have this be an opportunity for student athletes to think about something else. I mean, if nothing better, it's a learning process, and it certainly will be an educational process for many to determine, what this means for each individual student athlete and what their place is in the mix.
I can see how, Bruce, this would put student athletes at odds with their own universities in some way, depending on the governing law. So whether that's state or federal, I mean, how does it play out in terms of that interplay between the student athlete and the university? And then what does it mean generally for athletic departments?
Well, I think right now, there's a great need among, throughout athletic departments to kind of understand how these different key issues are going to be resolved. What are the rules going to be going forward? How do we, look at and determine whether there are conflicts or not? I mean, from an idealistic perspective, you know, hopefully, you know, this will be viewed, you know, not as an adversarial situation, but more of, you know, hey, this, you know, a rising tide lifts all ships, right? And so now, if you have the opportunity to, you know, to co-brand and to work together with student athletes in a way that increases the value of a license, that increases the value of a sponsorship, I would hope that athletic departments and people within the university would embrace that as something good for their student athletes. Certainly, there would be a divergence of opinion because some may look at it as a threat. You know, I mean, is this going to take away from, you know, from the available pool of sponsorship dollars, you know, for the institution? And if someone can go and do a sponsorship with our key athletes, you know, maybe that's going to negatively impact our bottom line. And I think that this all remains to be seen, but it's coming. And so I think that the best thing that athletic departments can do is stay on top of it. And again, given, you know, all the uncertainty in the world right now as to how these different issues are going to be resolved, I think a lot of people may say, well, let's just wait and see what happens. But all of a sudden that day is going to come. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's important to, you know, to understand, even though we may not know every answer to every question, that there's an understanding of what the issues are and what our responsibility is going to be going forward to make sure, hopefully, that we are doing all that we can do to encourage our student athletes to flourish, but by the same time, understand how that interacts with our current sponsors and their rights so that we're not, you know, creating any harm in the process. And it's going to be a fine juggling act that lawyers are going to need to be involved in to help sort it all out, for sure.
And Bruce is raising his hand, folks, and that makes sense because, as we talked about before we came on the air, seriously, there's counsel needed here because when there's a Wild West chaos environment until the rules get set, there's the opportunity for bad actors to come in, and particularly when you're talking about student athletes, 18, 19, 20 year old individuals that, you know, don't know what all the ins and outs of this and implications of this activity could be. There's really the opportunity to be taken advantage of by a lot of different people, whether it's your own university, whether it's, you know, bad agents, what have you, right? I mean, there's a lot of different issues here.
There are a lot of different issues. And, you know, I think that the way that this is going to pan out ultimately at the end of the day, student athletes are going to have a lot of responsibility on their shoulders to, you know, to put themselves in the right place, right? I mean, I don't think that the schools are going to necessarily, you know, they may be, you know, handing over the keys to the car, but they're not necessarily teaching the student athletes how to drive. Mm. And so, you know, that there will be rules, you know, that there will be the possibility for unscrupulous people, you know, either trying to, you know, bring in and you know, sign someone to a contract to do an endorsement or a licensing deal that doesn't have good terms that are in the best interest of the student athlete, maybe that don't, you know, that don't pay enough. On the other hand, you could have, you know, just hypothetically, you know, what if there's a booster who says, well, look, you know, if you come to our school, I want to pay you $500,000 to come to our car dealership and sign autographs one afternoon. And so, you know, what does that mean? And so, you know, I think that there are all kinds of, you know, I think that, and some of it may be overblown. I mean, I think that it's easy to conjure up, you know, what ifs and, you know, mm-hmm. and stories. But I think that at the end of the day, hopefully, you know, clear heads will prevail and that people will, you know, use judgment and common sense, and that student athletes will have the access to the kinds of educational resources and professional branding resources that they will need to, you know, to flourish in this new world.
Yeah, and this is where someone like you comes in, a professional like you, and I mean, you can speak to the complexities of the issue from the university side, because you were obviously involved in that and still are. You've been involved in that for many, many years, and that played out in different ways over the years, right? So talk about some of the ongoing educational efforts that are going on here.
Well, yeah, and again, you know, being in my role at Taylor English, you know, I now have the ability to create, you know, opportunities to work with companies and people that are going to be involved in this space. And there are a couple of different areas. One organization, Accelerate Sports Ventures, is a company that is looking to partner with collegiate institutions to provide educational resources really across the board, you know, helping everyone from coaches to compliance directors to anyone in the athletic department. And this is an ongoing process because, you know, the rules continue to evolve, but, you know, to help, you know, answer the questions and be an educational resource, as well as to provide these services for the student athletes at that school. And that will be done through a series of, at least, you know, for now, you know, Zoom opportunities where, you know, you focus on a particular area. One may be, you know, what are the NCAA compliance issues related to conflicts? What are the NCAA issues related to the role of agents in the process? Because these laws all do provide for the ability, you know, for agents to play a role. Now, the universities can't do deals on behalf of the student athletes. That's important to point out. And I don't see that changing. That's not going to be the case. But what they can do is help, you know, provide an educational component and facilitate a better understanding. And then, you know, agents come in. Ultimately, the student athlete has the responsibility to, you know, to make good decisions. You know, one of my roles in that regard will be to participate in programs geared towards student athletes who need to all of a sudden be thinking about things like, do I need an LLC to, you know, to be the entity through which I enter into to deals? What are the tax implications? Am I developing protectable domain names, trademarks, you know, the intellectual property that is associated with me? And, you know, what do I need to do to ensure that others aren't out taking advantage of my intellectual property? So there, you know, I think that the educational component of this that will be, you know, offered by Accelerate and potentially, you know, other entities out there will be a very important part of the process.
Yeah, and there's a coordination here where someone like you can be helpful, because what we've seen over many years is that the pie continues to grow, and it continues to grow because of, you know, innovations around trademarks and understanding the value of that intellectual property and so forth. And there's opportunities here to coordinate between the universities and the student athletes that are part of that university, because everyone's got the same interest at the end of the day, right? And that's to expand their piece of a ever-growing pie.
I think that's exactly right. And again, you know, it'll be interesting to, you know, right now, I think it's safe to say that among all of the constituents and, you know, as athletics directors and compliance, you know, people and university council, student athletes look at this, you know, that there's a certain amount of angst, in part because this is change, and this is change that we don't know how that will impact us on a day-to-day basis. What do we need to learn and know to, you know, to make sure that we're, you know, protecting our institution and our student athletes through this process? What will be interesting is, flash forward to several years down the road, hopefully people will look back and say, this wasn't as big of a deal as it may have appeared to be at the time. This is actually working well because, we've got student athletes and now they've got the ability to make a little bit of, revenue while they're making their way through school and to learn about business. And, there's some synergy in, our university, brands and trademarks, tied together with student athletes' name, images, and likeness. And this is pretty cool. We've got this entire new, portfolio of intellectual property rights that are now available, just like they're now currently available, through professional leagues. And again, collegiate institutions aren't professional leagues, but when you look at that model and you see that, no one would question that, if you're a player, for the Atlanta Falcons, that, you're going to be supporting the brand of the Atlanta Falcons, hopefully, but you also have the ability, to enter into some agreements, either yourself or on a group basis, that allows you to, as the player, to generate those revenues. And, at some point, it's going to not be a foreign idea just because you're in the space of being a student athlete. Now, again, not to take anything away from the fact that this is truly a paradigm shift because, again, as this process moves forward, this is a huge, huge change because it will be, the first time in the history of college sports when it will be allowable and not prohibited for a student athlete to be able to become entrepreneurial and, figure out how to be, part of this this college marketplace mix and to benefit from their own contribution as an individual and as a student athlete.
I guess we can see it coming now. The announcement practice is over in 5 minutes and the business roundtable starts 15 minutes later, something like that. Right. So maybe that's what's coming for student athletes, but we're business here. We're about, and we're about business about for student athletes and for universities, but also businesses, outside businesses that maybe want to get involved in attaching their brand to that of some of these athletes and they see this opportunity, how would you counsel them?
Well, I think that's a super point because, there are opportunities and in fact, I have, licensees, among other things, I work with licensees who are trying to, to grow their business in the world of licensing by adding schools, by maybe expanding into licenses with professional leagues and the like. And I've had a number of companies come to me and say, look, I've got some really cool ideas about how I would like to, to be involved in acquire rights to the name, images, and likenesses of student athletes. And, as in my role and, over the years of, knowing so many people in the world of, of collegiate, professional, and licensed manufacturers, I look forward to having the opportunity to play a role in opening doors and in, making connections and, facilitating, good deals, both in licensing and endorsements that will, be beneficial to licensees. Because I do think it creates new opportunities to get involved in the collegiate space or to add to what you're currently doing if you're already in the collegiate licensing or endorsement space.
Well, it sounds like there are a number of different ways and places that you can be helpful across the board here, given your experience and knowledge in this area. So, Bruce, let's get to the most important question, which is for those that would like to be in touch and get to know you and get your help and assistance, what are your coordinates? How can they do that?
Oh, I would certainly, be delighted to hear from people interested in any of this. And, my email, bsiegel@taylorenglish.com, is the most direct way to reach me. I'm very active on LinkedIn. And so, feel free to ping me on LinkedIn and connect with me on LinkedIn as well, which includes some additional kind of background about me. And those are probably two of the best ways to reach me.
Great stuff here, folks, from Bruce Siegel. He is senior counsel with Taylor English here in Atlanta. Bruce, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks again for having me on the show. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Folks, just a quick reminder, if you've got some issues in your business that involve administrative tasks, bookkeeping, maybe some marketing that you're doing as a business owner that you really need to outsource to someone else that can take that over and let you work on revenue, for example, something that's pretty important to the life of your business, my suggestion is to get on the phone and call S.E. Escobedo over at Office Angels, 770-442-9246. Now, S.E. has been, she's had her firm for 21 years now, and they've been working virtually all this time, so a pandemic does not scare them in any way. She's got a whole team of angels that she picks out based on the needs that you have, and they fly in, get the job done, and fly out on an ongoing or as-needed basis. But it starts with a phone call. And so what my suggestion is give her a call, 770-442-9246. Tell her I sent you. If you're shy, go to the website and look at officeangels.us and check out all the endorsements that she has there. But just give her a call. I think you'll be glad you did. And folks, just a quick reminder that you can find our show on all the major podcast apps. North Fulton Business Radio is the search term. We would love it if you would go on your favorite app, find the show and subscribe, and then give us a 5-star review. And I ask this not for myself, not for Business Radio X, but for our great guests that we've had over the years, business leaders like Bruce. Working on show, we're up to show number 350 or so, and we've had well over 600 guests over these last 5 years. We want people to find those guests. So we would love it if you would give us that little boost out there with that 5-star review, and then connect with us on social media. North Fulton BRX is our handle on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and maybe a few others. I don't know, Bruce. We'll have to talk about that later. So for my guest, Bruce Siegel, I'm John Ray. Join us next time here on North Fulton Business Radio.